Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me. Anyhow, that's how I feel. Wow, I feel just like a Pollyanna.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the internationally beloved podcast, In Bed with Nick and Megan, starring the kingly Nick Offerman.
Good evening.
And his poor put-upon wife, Megan Mullally.
Poor woman.
And today featuring extra super special guest star, goddess-like figure, Rashida Jones. Rashida Jones. Hi,
hello.
Rashida.
Welcome.
Hi, Megan. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Oh, it's so nice to hear
to
you guys.
See you always.
And nice to see you.
Yeah. So how are you? How are you doing?
You know, I feel very lucky, and it's a surreal time, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. But I'm shocked at how adaptable people I know have been, and I've been, and
yeah,
you know, I mean, not everybody's so lucky that they can do that, but yeah, I'm adapting to Good. The new world.
Good. Yeah, I guess we are too. I mean, this is nice. It's been nice to do podcasts because it's like a social life sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
totally.
It's as close as we could get right now.
Scheduled friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Play dates. So now I know that you guys have a lot to talk about because you worked together on one certain television program that I like to call Cheers. No, Parks and Recreation.
Yes, the one people might know it as the TV show with Star-Lord on it.
Wait, Star-Lord.
Who's Star-Lord?
Star-Lord is Peter Quince, who Pratt plays in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh my God. We just Venn diagrammed like the two people who don't know what that is.
That's funny. So yeah, that I loved you on that show, Rashida, because you know, you're so good at playing comedy, but keeping it so real. You know, not a lot of people can do that.
Thank you. I appreciate that framing of it because I've spent almost my whole career being like the straight guy, which is super fun because it's allowed me to be around the funniest people in the world. And it's not like, you know, listen, everybody needs a straight guy. It's an important counterbalance for comedy. But I like that framing of it, Megan.
I think you're so funny, though. And
thank you.
You are very funny. I mean, you're funny, you know, as a person in real life also, but I think you are so good at that. I guess I envy that because I always play these characters that could not possibly be more over the top, you know? So I like...
I envy you. I think this feels like a real setup for a Freaky Friday moment.
We just switched bodies, you guys. It's happened. This is Rashida speaking.
Oh, I love my new hair.
Wow.
Speaking of hair, I'm gonna like quarantine. I'm gonna give myself a quarantine haircut.
Do you know how to cut your own hair?
I used to cut my own hair all the time. I cut my own hair for 3 straight years at one point, and it was short, wow, which is hard. But it's just long and straight across right now, so I'm going to cut about 3 or 4 inches off of it. And
you're just going to go straight, like completely
yeah,
straight?
Yeah, because that's what it is right now, yeah.
So, you might need Nick for the back.
I know. He doesn't
I'll
know that yet. Yeah, he doesn't. I haven't formally asked him yet. But
you're also nicely shorn, Nicholas. Like that feels like a nice high and tight situation over
Thank
there.
Thank you.
Yeah. What's the future?
It's actually Megan. My facial hair and my haircut are usually steered by whatever acting job I have currently or coming up, and at the moment I don't have one. And so Megan's favorite thing is clean shaven. For some reason, she doesn't prefer a thistle bush rubbing against her face.
Don't understand why.
Yeah. And also she likes me with a very short haircut because she, quote, likes to see my head shape. And apparently,
well, he's got a gigantic head. And so when it's short, it's just kind of a nice head shape that is within the realm of possibility to still be a head. But when he gets a lot of hair, because he's also got a lot of hair and it's right, you know, thick, then his head just becomes, it's just gargantuan.
It's melon-like.
Yeah. Gargantuan.
Yeah.
Did you really have sex with melons when you were a kid?
No.
Okay. Wait,
you
what?
Didn't really do that?
I never did,
He's
no.
always talking about...
Well, no, it's a know, bit like, that I developed.
It's gross.
I can very specifically...
I'm sorry, Rashida. Much
no, I'm so happy
this.
To be in bed. Here yeah. we go.
Welcome. There's a passage in a Cormac McCarthy novel, probably one of his lesser known ones, called Sutri, which is really good. And if anybody wants to make it into a film, please call me. And there's this character named Gene Harrogate, who's this like rat boy, homeless kid who lives down under the viaduct by the river in Kansas City. And we are introduced to this character through one of the most beautifully rendered lovemaking scenes that you only figure out a little later that it was him fucking a melon. It was him like, you hear this click of his knife opening. And then he describes the sex scene completely through the sound of a distant freight train coming chugging and like climaxing and tooting its horn and then receding, fading and beating into the distance. And then when it lands, you're like, wait a second. You go back and read it again. And you're like, man, Cormac McCarthy, you son of a bitch.
Wow.
I'm so sorry.
That's got a little bit of Peach. Call Me By Your Name, Peach energy. Did you see that movie, Call Me By Your Name?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Call Me By Your Name, Where the Peach, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, it's a...
Just fruit play, I think we could call that.
It's a much more convenient and accessible.
Right. Yeah, melon really, sounds hard.
We've exhausted a lot of the possibilities here. And I
could go
would
on.
Like to move
There's
on.
A whole other. So
Megan wants us to move on.
But well, yeah, I brought it up. Let's so keep it moving. I don't know. I'm an instigator and then I'm a shutter downerer. Whatever that is. So one of the things that I definitely want to talk to you about, Rashida, before we get into more melon reminiscences is, you know, I'm a huge fan of your documentaries, your documentary series that you made. Hot Girls Wanted.
Oh, yeah. I remember you told me you watched that. You were one of 50 people who watched that.
I love that. So it's so important, you know, and I admire you so much for working on a variety of projects and some of which, like like the Hot Girls Wanted series are really important and can help to bring about change. So can you just tell me a little bit about how that all got, you know, how you got enlisted, or I don't know if that was your idea or.
Yeah, I met these filmmakers, Jill Bauer and Ronna Gratis. I met them, oh, I guess like a decade ago at a conference in New York, the Women in the World conference. And I had been just as a person really interested in the dynamic for young women, especially of sexuality versus sexualization,
mm-hmm.
and how that was culturally being taught through music, media, all that stuff. My interests kind of converged with like also this, the rise of like third wave feminism, which is like, you know, body positivity and like anything goes, which is so awesome. But it's like this, there's this weird nuanced thing that's like, what does like real agency look like? What is like a woman who is making a real conscious choice for consent? What does that look like? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I had met them. I had written a couple things about that, and they were making a movie. They had made this movie called Sexy Baby, which is really interesting. And it's about kind of coming of age in the digital age. Like they follow a 13-year-old who's like, has like a cool DA mom and lives in New York and is like very liberal and smart. Her kind of like reckoning with her own puberty and being online and like wanting to post sexy pictures and what her mom does about that. And then a woman in her 20s who is a kindergarten teacher who wants labial reconstructive surgery because every guy she's been with has told her that she's weird because of whatever they've seen in porn. And a 30-something-year-old porn performer who is making a living as a stripper. So it's just kind of like this really cool like slice of humanity from these different decades. I loved it so much. And they had told me they were working on this film, Hot Girls Wanted It. They'd done some filming of young women in Miami who wanted to break into amateur porn, which is, for those who don't know, it's just like a genre. It's not really amateur. It's like, it's the same thing that everybody else does. It's just made to look like it's kind of new girls who've never done it before. And I was very interested, and they showed me their footage and, you know, asked if I could come on as producer. And it was a very quick learning experience for me because I had never produced a documentary before. I'd never worked in that. I mean, it's a very heavy, serious, complicated subject, you know, and getting to know the girls who were in the film was hugely educational for me because they're complex, smart. They're just really full people. So I got to know these women a little bit, the women that were in our film, and their stories. And really they come into this because there's all these indicators that they're going to have this like fantastic life. They're going to go to Miami and like party and have fun and have money and agency and autonomy. And like, you know, they live in this kind of house that's like a sorority house, and they have like friends and community. And the truth is it's hard work, you know. It's hard on your body, it's hard on your head, it's hard on your heart, and it's not for everybody. And you know, I think there's so much to be said on the subject matter, but I really relate as an actress. I think there's a lot that we have in common, and it's hard to know what you want and what's really from choice and what's from pressure.
Mm-hmm.
It's complicated because I think I probably won't do anything more in this sphere because it's a very insular world. And because I came at it from personal interest and maybe a little bit in an academic way and got to know people and felt like we painted these pictures of like full people, like the people that we knew and came to really care about. But, you know, there was a lot of people within the industry who didn't like our representation. They didn't like just our presence in their world. and didn't feel like we had a right to talk about it because we have never worked in that industry before.
Oh, yeah. So that's really okay. I can't even really wrap my head around that because I don't know anything about it. And you now do know quite a bit about it. But what was it about the way things were represented that people in the industry, or is that too complicated of a question or an answer?
It's so complicated. It's such a complicated business. But I think, well, the first and foremost, very legitimately, it's a marginalized profession. Mm-hmm. Sex work is a marginalized profession. So any negative attention brought to people who already are struggling to find their way in the world doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. So that part I completely understand and I get. And I, you know, my intention, especially with the series, our intention, Jill and Ron and I, we wanted to paint a much bigger, broader picture of the industry. Like, you know, and not even just the industry, tech and sex and relationship. Like the series, you know, we talk about dating online. We talk about apps. We talk about camming and cam girls. We talk about interracial porn. We talk about feminist porn. Like we broadened the whole thing for that purpose because we told one story in Hot Girls Wanted, the story of these young girls who moved to Miami and try to enter amateur porn. And the upshot is like, it's very difficult to survive because after 6 months, everybody's seen your face and you can no longer seem like an amateur. They won't cast you. So you have to kind of make decisions about your next steps in the industry. And like, if you're given the choices, some of the choices may not be things you want to do. So that's its own story. And then the series was way more about just kind of how we interact with each other and our sexuality online and with the tools of tech, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think the first part is that it's so reasonable for people who feel marginalized to feel further marginalized by having a bright, shining light on their industry and not feel understood. But the second part of it is also that just having talked to some people that I know in the industry is that they feel like they can't say anything critical of their own industry or they will be pushed out. Mm-hmm. I am happy to say lots of things about my industry. I have a lot of problems with it and I would be happy to watch any documentary on it. And I would be interested to see what somebody from the outside thinks about it looking in, you know, that would be interesting to me. But then again, it's not marginalized work. So, you know, I think I sort of like boldly went off on this journey and had a very steep learning curve in terms of what was possible.
Well, look, I mean, that is really, it's very complex and, you know, it's so hard to know anymore really with almost anything, like how you might possibly be deeply offending certain people. However, having said all of that, having established that, I think Hot Girls Wanted and Hot Girls Wanted Turned On are very important, and that as many people as possible who are not in any way familiar with those worlds should watch them because it, at the very least, I think they're, well, I think there's no at the very least. I think that they're important. So, you know, and there are people who are always going to take exception to, especially in marginalized professions, communities. But, you know, it's they're really, really beautifully done.
Thank you. Thanks. And, you know, listen, I hope that there's more stories to be told from inside, from outside about that entire industry, because it's a very important industry. It is a hugely consumed, very influential industry that we refuse to talk about. And that was really my intention, was just to be like, hey guys, everybody's using porn. Like, can we just start a conversation about it? Like, let's just start talking about it. You know?
Well, you know, I don't watch porn I mean, I have watched porn, but not for a long time. And I didn't realize how violent a lot of porn is now. And I don't know how to talk about that, so I should probably just shut up. But I was pretty, I don't shock easily, but I was like, oh, is she going to die now or what?
Yeah, it's, it is, there's a statistic in the film that four, and that was at the time, but you know, it's probably changed, but 40% of porn is violent against women, which that's everything that ranges from like real violence to like a slap on the butt or whatever. But it's, to me, I'm like, adults can do whatever they want. They can enjoy whatever they want, but it's unfortunately become a tool of sex education because there's such bad sex education mm-hmm. in the United States. Like half the kids in the United States have less than 2 days of sex ed. So they look to the easiest way to see like what's going on, like how, what am I supposed to be doing? Right. And because of it, like we did these studies with the Kinsey Institute at in Indiana University, and they, like the findings are like, there's so much choking and teen sex. There's so many things that like, I think parents would be shocked to know is happening because kids are have this direct line to this thing that they don't really have any control over. Even if you have a filter, like there's a kid down the street whose parent probably doesn't have a filter, mm-hmm. you know?
And wasn't there some kind of movement afoot within the last, you know, 5 years or so to sort of re-educate kids about or kind of give them options of how you could have sex that's not just full on jackhammering 24/7, you know, because
who was doing that?
Well,
who was jackhammering? Cool. No, they're all jackhammering. Yeah, who's trying to make them not jackhammering?
Well, I read something about that about like 3 years ago, that there was some program that trying to educate kids about how, you know, you don't really have to do that. And maybe girls don't like that, or maybe boys don't like this. And
yeah.
I mean, I hope that that's really a thing that's still happening.
I feel like given the context, it's, you know, I'll drop in a PSA, like in case you're listening to this and because I've suffered from this as a kid, like when I was learning about sex, what I later learned was I wish I had the wherewithal to just talk to my prospective partners and say, do you want to, like, do you like this? Do you not like this? Instead of fearing what I had been taught by society, which was that I had to somehow be, you know, a player and a dog, and like, and even partners that I would be with would say like, don't talk, you'll ruin it. Like, why don't you just take me like an animal kind of stuff, where I'd be like, you know, I'm having.
You're so not the type to take someone
feelings,
like an animal.
But I also care about you, and like, don't.
Right.
I don't feel like I should just like bite down on your neck or something. Like,
but that's what your partners
me
wanted.
That was me. He's talking
it was
about
all
me.
Megan.
Honey, you can just say
it was Megan.
That's fine.
And my live action role playing name is Jack Hammer. So this is just kind of a therapy session. But no,
he's legally changing.
But for real, the PSA to the listeners is like, don't. Porn is not a how to for the actual art of making love, and instead talk to your partners about it and like find out what people actually like from.
I always feel like it would be so much better if it seemed like the people were actually really doing it. I mean, I know they're really doing it. Wait, I know how it works. They're
the way
really
they would want to do it.
But if they were actually really like doing it, like real people do it, it would be so much
Well,
better.
There is a lot of porn like that. There's a lot of great kind of artful porn where people, you could tell that people are enjoying themselves. Like one of the episodes, the episode that I directed about Erica Lust, she's a director, she's Swedish, she lives in Spain, and she makes, like, she has a subscription-based site, and she makes erotica, and, you know, we spent time with her, and the woman who was in her film had never done porn before. She'd always been kind of interested in it, and it was hard work, but she was, like, very happy that she did it, because she got to see that it was, like, hard at times in a way that wasn't sexy, and then also, like, there were things about it that turned her on. So, yeah, it would be nice to watch people enjoy things. But, you know, I mean, we're actors. Like, a lot of times we're acting, for whether it's love scenes or fight scenes or whatever. Like, there's a leap. Sometimes you can fill it in with reality, but, like, there's a bit of a leap. It's fantasy. And that's the same with porn, is that there's going to be some fantasy involved, you know?
Life is a highway. and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Yeah, so just kind of scooching over to our world of acting.
Well, we could talk about acting for a little bit. I mean, I'll just say this. Like, I think, you know, it's a rare thing to have a job that is, you know, it's many, many hours during of the day at, where you're sort of like, you know, it's pretty intensive, but, and I'm not just saying this because Nick is present, but the job that we shared, Parks and Recreation, there was something so energizing and moralizing about the vibe on our set and the, and the
it was
ensemble.
Special. Yeah.
It was special. Mm-hmm. Like, I so look forward to going to work every day. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't wait.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
fun.
I envy that. You know, I think that that's so cool. And it was every time I was ever on your set, I felt the same way. And I was like, this is the best. And, you know, you guys had such a great cast. But everybody, I mean, everybody from Mike Schur on down, like, you know, everyone.
Yeah, the leadership
on that show
was
fantastic.
Was
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
And it starts, and you know, it starts from that.
Mm-hmm,
Mike
really
and
does.
Amy. And
Mike and Amy, yeah. And I haven't really had that. So, you know, that is an easy, breezy kind of, you know, ideal way to make a living if you can get into a situation like that.
It's just so, you just don't know how to, it's hard to find, like, it's hard to figure out how to get there. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you can actually do anything to get there. Mm-mm. In a weird way. You know,
no,
I feel like I just got lucky.
It's fate. Yeah. It's,
I just, this is, this, I'm really enjoying this conversation and it's bringing up lots of memories for me. But what I totally forgot until just now was that I initially auditioned for a different part.
Oh yeah.
And
oh,
we went on tape and we had a blast.
Rashida's,
it was super so fun.
Rashida's awesome. Love interest,
as,
right?
Yeah. Like eventually to end up with
Mark.
Rashida. And NBC was like, no, 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 no. You're suggesting that Rashida Jones would be interested in Nick Offerman? And literally the quote
no.
was that they said to Mike and Greg, you told me Aaron Eckhart and you hand me Nick Offerman?
No, no.
Get out
I
of my office.
Love it.
No. They just knew that you could be your best you if they created a part around you.
Well, there's no need to over-egg the pudding, but that I'm flattered even to, you know, even to be considered for a
that's
moment.
That's weird to think, though. And then Chris Pratt ended up being fulfilling that.
No, that was a different part.
No,
oh,
it
no,
was just
that was,
Mark Brendanowitz.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right.
When I
oh,
read
right.
for it,
yeah.
his name was
Paul
Josh.
Schneider. Josh, right. Oh my God, Josh.
And it became, it like went through some iterations because ruined it, they were like,
no,
okay,
you didn't ruin it.
Let's make it a whole new thing and make it Mark Brendanowitz.
So I know. I read with you and I read with Adam Scott.
Right. Which bummed me out so hard. Cause like I had known Adam, we both have known him for a long time. So, you know, When you go to an audition, you don't want Adam Scott walking in. If you're, you know, you're like, oh, great.
And then we all got to work together, which is even crazier.
It is. It's so crazy. Yeah.
The craziest thing too is I don't know if you guys know the story, but so Mike and I have been friends for years, right? We went to college together.
I want to dig into that. In a minute, but go ahead.
Okay, so then we worked together on The Office for a year, and I had been friends with Amy for a while, and I was on hold for this Sure Daniels project, and they didn't know what it was. They didn't know if they were going to use me. They just like paid me to hold me for 6 months. Amy and I went to Rome together because Will Arnett and my mom were doing a movie together, and Amy was super pregnant. Went to Rome together. So fun. Went back to New York. Day after we got back, she was like, "We got to have lunch." She took me to lunch. She was like, "I just have to tell you that Mike offered me that show." Like, I was full crying because we both assumed she got offered the part that I was on hold for.
Right.
And Mike was on a plane and I was like texting him like, "What is going on?" And then when he got off the plane, he's like, no, that's a different, we changed the boss. The boss was a woman and it's Amy. And then I went from, you know, being so upset to being like, oh my God, wait, we might actually be like working together.
That's a crazy moment that I never heard about.
I know. It was really intense.
Oh my
really
God.
Intense. And Amy was so sweet. And we were at Pastis in the West Village and she grabbed my hand and I was crying and she was so supportive because we both thought it was like, you know,
oh my God. Over. So many tears around the creation of that show.
Yeah. So many tears.
I had such a sobbing fest when I finally got it after a long, arduous, torturous audition process over 5 months. Mm-hmm. Finally, Mike called me to tell me that I got the job. And I just said, all right, listen, let's keep talking, but I'm going to just openly sob for about 20 minutes. Wet tears.
Oh my God.
I ruined a large portion of our oak kitchen floor. But listen, I want to dig into this, something that I always was fascinated with and never got to talk to you much about. I love secret societies, and I grew up in Illinois, and like it was a big deal that I even got to go to a state school, University of Illinois. And so like the thought of going to Chicago, let alone New York, or these other places that I'd only read about, like Harvard, for example, or Boston, or Cambridge, excuse me. And so eventually I've become to be friends and like work with people who went to Harvard. It's just you literally might as well have gone to Hogwarts. And so getting to be friends with Greg Daniels, with Conan over the years, and then learning about this comedy pipeline that's crazy, that just off the top of my head, Greg Daniels and Conan were roommates at Harvard. Al Franken is thrown into the mix. And it's this SNL pipeline where one of the choices, if you're like one of the smartest, funniest people in the world, I guess one of your choices is like, oh, I would love to write TV shows. So I'm sure I'm missing a ton of people, but it jumps to your era, which is you and Mike Schur and Dan Gore, who was our story editor, but created and now has run Brooklyn Nine-Nine for its whole life. Mm-hmm. You guys,
Charlie Grandy.
And was,
do you know Grandy? Grandy?
I've met him. Yeah. And
Matt Murray.
Matt Murray was there. And was Yang there?
Yang's younger than me.
But he came behind.
A lot younger.
But Ellen Yang, Megan Amram.
Nick Stoller.
I mean, so you guys were you were doing acting stuff together. Like, weren't you in some kind of company or sketch group or something?
Dan was in a improv group called On Thin Ice. There was all these like little, you know, it's like extracurriculars in school. Mike and Dan and I, and I don't know if Stoller acted. I don't know. But we were in like the Harvard Radcliffe Dramatic Club. I'm sure Megan was too. Megan Amram. Mm-hmm. Megan and I were both at separate times in the Hasty Pudding Theatricals, which is, you know, like the drag show, the oldest organization, theatrical organization in the country. Right. She wrote the script her year. And I think she was she might have been the first female team to write the script. And I was we were the first female team to write the music ever in like 160 years of history. Like
crazy.
Because it was an all male review until last year,
Oh, too my crazy. God.
Not okay. God. But anyway.
That's full on kabuki.
It's yeah.
No girls
yeah.
allowed.
Yeah. Wow. But anyway, so, everybody kind of like overlapped a little bit, but Mike and I met freshman year. We did a play together called Love, Sex, and the IRS, which was a farce where he played my boyfriend. The show opened on us making out on a couch and he has to dress as a woman, full Three's Company style for the landlord not to be mad that like he's living with me or whatever.
Classic.
And then Dan Gore and I were in The Female Odd Couple together. He played my Spanish boyfriend, Female Odd Couple. Sophomore year.
That is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
It's so wild. But they were also in the Lampoon, which, you know, is so famously like the beginning of the pipeline for every, you know, comedy writer. I was not in the Lampoon.
One of my favorite.
I'm fine with that.
all right. I mean, you can only do so much. You have to have balance in your life as a student. But one of my favorite tidbits from my fascination with this secret society is Conan. When Conan was there, he was the head of the Lampoon. Mm-hmm. And then then there's sort of like the Square student newspaper or something. Does it have the word
Crimson?
Crimson? Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Crimson at the same time was run by Jeff Zucker. And
oh, right. Oh and my God. Oh, the That's showdown.
Crazy.
And Conan, here's the crazy thing. Conan like would constantly emasculate him and like just pants him in front of the world. You know, they would set him up for these crazy pranks and Zucker would always take the bait, you know, and Conan would pull the football away from Charlie Brown. And then Zucker went on to be the head of NBC when all that Jay Leno stuff went down.
Wow.
So Zucker like got to give Conan his evil comeuppance as like the villain in the Conan story.
Oh, this goes back to my theory. It's crazy? Not exact, but high school never ends.
It never ends. Yeah.
It never ends. It's the same dynamics always crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think like, I'm sure there's stories like that from our year, but I have to say like having such a like tight knit community of people who work in the same industry that like I've known since I was 17 it's awesome. Like that's the best thing about having gone there is that I got to meet all those people so early and like, they're still my friends, you know, we could work together.
It's so great. Cool. Yeah. I mean, you can't deny the humanity when you know, when you've seen, you know, literally gone through so much of life with these people. And now, you know, you guys are all these accomplished artists in so many ways, but you know that you can. I mean, I was so grateful when I met you and started working with you because we were big fans of yours from The Office, and you present with such humanity of like, hey man, like everything is super casual, so let's not get sweaty about anything. And so like whenever now we're at a function, I'm especially so happy to see you because you're also Hollywood royalty, like you're showbiz royalty. And so you always know, like you're over it. So you're like, so we can find you and be like, Rashida, like what's the lowdown? And you're like, oh, this is not a big deal. If you want drugs, they probably go around behind that cabana. Otherwise, usually the shrimp thing is good. Anyway.
Literally, if all that comes out of today is that I know where to get seafood and drugs, I'm cool with that. That's my tombstone right there.
You're our go-to. You know? So speaking of Hollywood royalty, also in case anybody hasn't seen the incredible documentary you made about your dad, Quincy Jones, and the documentary is called Quincy. It's so good. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Thank you.
What was that like? That must have been that's
intense.
Crazy, right?
Intense,
to like
yeah.
make a documentary about your father and
all the feelings
legend.
All the time. Like just love, heartbreaking and love, and then sheer annoyance that you have with your parent, and then just exhaustion and like, you know, and then all the things that you feel when you're making a movie, which is like, this sucks and it's never going to be any good. And then, oh, wait, I think I got it. And then like, wait, maybe I don't have it. And then I think I got it. And just the chipping away at the story. Mm. But thank God, I mean, Al Hicks, who directed it with me, is like an angel on earth and so talented. He made a movie called Keep On Keeping On. Have you seen
mm-hmm.
that movie?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you guys, if you want to cry more tears on your oak floors, it is okay. so great. It's about Clark Terry, who was my dad's mentor and Miles Davis's mentor.
Oh, wow.
And his last mentee is this kid, Justin Coughlin, who's incredible pianist, blind. Kid. And it's about both of their journeys, their friendship, their kind of like mentor-mentee relationship, and then their own personal journeys with jazz. It's so beautiful. And I met Al like the first day I ever picked up a 5D camera. I'd never used it before. I was in Switzerland at the Montreux Jazz Festival. And I was like, I'm going to make this movie about my dad. And just like started filming really bad, blurry, wobbly footage. And met Al, who was shooting the last day of his movie. And he was like, do you want me to help you with that camera? I was like, yes, I very much do. Please.
And is that how you met him?
Yeah. Or? Well, I met him. We were filming the same scene, which
Holy
was like
cow.
Rehearsal for Montreux, my dad and Justin. And because Justin became my dad's artist through Clark. My dad came to see Clark when he was sick, and Al met my dad there, and Justin met my dad there. And then he was like, I want to sign you. And so the kind of finale of his movie is like Justin performing at the jazz festival with my dad. And like the first scene in my movie is like my dad at the jazz festival, like working too hard.
Aww,
that's amazing.
That.
And that is yeah. a great technique to snag a collaborator. Like
totally.
I'm going to find out what Greta Gerwig is shooting and then show up with a camera and be like, oh, I'm also shooting this.
But oh, that's so weird.
Do you
Can
know
you
how
me?
This lens cap works?
Line up.
That's so great. Well, you know, you're so accomplished and you're so young. I mean, you're very versatile. You've done a lot of different things. You wrote that movie. I'll never forget. We went to the screening of it. Celeste and Jesse.
Oh, yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
Celeste and Jesse Forever. It's so good. And we went to the screening of that and I was like, wait, what? She wrote it and she's in it and it's so great. And you're really got a lot
Thanks.
Of talents.
That was
Thanks, y'all.
That was Andy Samberg's big break.
Andy Samberg's big break. Yeah, nobody knew who he was before that. That was his. That was a little bit of a dramatic turn for Andy.
Yeah, I love that. People like that who are so good at doing
oh my
more
God.
Dramatic stuff. It happens
he
all
came
the
to
time.
Play, man. Oh
yeah.
my God! Like he really. We've been friends for years, and he was so like. Right for that part. That relationship is actually like our friendship is very much like that. He brought so much of that to it. But when we had like our fight scenes, we had to break it down. I was like, damn, like he really, really blew me away.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so many people who are really funny, like Molly Shannon also is
oh,
great
she's
at
so
dramatic
great.
Stuff and so moving
Sandler.
And heartbreaking. Sandler. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So many people like
Jim
that.
Jim Carrey.
Yes. Yeah. yeah.
Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah. And I feel
Best.
Like a lot of times with people like that, not always, but Adam Sandler in particular, I feel like he rarely does it. But when he does, it's
oh,
so
man.
Incredible. And I'm like,
I
why
know.
Don't you do that all the time?
Because comedy's sad. And I think it's easier to process sadness through comedy because at least you're like, you're giving yourself a break. If you process sadness through sadness all the time, I think it's probably self-perpetuating and you're a little sad all the time. I can't imagine. Like my friends who are dramatic actors solely
I remember my friend telling me the story about doing a play, and she like got assaulted in the play every night. And every day at like 4:30, her stomach would start to like rumble in anticipation for what was going to happen, because she has to deliver. She has to make it real for herself to like make that moment real for everybody else. And that's so hard on your body.
That's
actually
crazy.
I saw, she's so lovely, Mary Kay. At your
Mary
house.
Kay Place?
Yes, yeah. I love her. But she had this great idea about helping actors come out of roles, because, you know, it's not nothing. Like, you kind of have to, if you're doing a certain kind of role, you have to traumatize yourself to get there. Like, there's got to be some sort of rehab to get out of that.
And what was her idea?
Just to have like some sort of like methodology or like curriculum to like help actors, like as much as you have acting class to get into a part, like something to help you get out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Cool.
I thought she had a specific thing in mind, but that's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so, you know, Laurie Anderson has a similar idea about soldiers. Like we in the same way, we go to all the trouble to prepare ourselves to either, you know, perform acts like this on stage or on screen, or to kill people in war, in the case of the soldiers. But then we're like, okay, we're done with you. Like, Lori's idea was, why don't we then train this back out of the soldiers so that they can just be human beings again when they come back?
I bet it has something to do with money.
Yeah. The disregard for veterans in this country is appalling. Did you guys see that Netflix series Five Came Back that was based on the book?
I've written down like 16 things you've said so far.
It's so good. It's about the five directors that were recruited by the Department of War to both document World War II and also make films to kind of support the country, collective morale of the country.
Oh, yeah.
So they recruited the best filmmakers of the time: Capra, William Wyler, John Ford, John Huston. It's the last one. Why can't I remember right now?
And a fifth.
But and these are the guys that gave us the footage that we see from D-Day, from the freeing of the camps, Dachau. Like that came from our best filmmakers of the time.
Wow.
And they went to war, they saw like the most gruesome things, and it changed their whole relationship with their art. But I think it was John Huston. There was a really incredible like footage from that of a film he made about soldiers after the war, and the War Department wouldn't release it because it was too real, and they didn't want to discourage people from joining the army. But like, obviously, you know, what happened, the horrors that they saw, like it can't be reversed at all. And he felt responsibility after going and seeing that to like show the soldiers and what they had been through. And, you know, we weren't having it. So.
So good. There's a great book of short stories by Phil Clay called Redeployment. It's one of my favorite books. And it's all
Phil Clay?
Clay. And it's all about, you know, various, it's mostly around the Iraqi war, I think, various soldiers and, you know, loosely connected short stories. It's really wonderful, but it's brutal too, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Just
the reality of what it really is like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you working on are you writing at all right now?
I'm writing some stuff. I'm writing some stuff. I did some acting this past year, and I have some stuff coming out.
Yeah, is that Black AF?
Yeah.
It's a great time. Really, you got a captive audience.
I know. held captive. And then I did a movie with Sofia Coppola that comes out later in the year. Not sure when. Yeah,
not a big deal.
Amazing.
I did say it sort of casually.
Well, but that's the thing with you.
That's a big deal.
You might have served at the mass of her baptism. Like you.
I've known Sophia socially for a while, and we've worked together a little bit. Well, we actually met my acting coach works with her a lot, and we met in my acting class. I workshopped Lost in Translation with her for like a month.
Wow.
What?
Playing that Scarlett Johansson part. Crazy. Just to help her like work through the script and stuff, which was awesome.
It was so great.
And now like years later we get to work together, which is great.
P.S. That's thank so you cool. for your service.
I don't know. I mean, you know.
That is so cool. What's that movie called?
It's called On the Rocks. Mm. And it's a movie about a father and a daughter, about a charming Lothario, kind of like aging Lothario father, and his daughter, who's like kind of going through a bit of a slump, a creative and life slump, married with two kids, and they're suspicious that maybe her husband might be cheating on her, so they like try to go find out.
Oh, that sounds right so on. Good. I love it.
Yeah.
And then Black AF, were you instrumental in the creation of that show, or was it something that came to you?
Kenya Barris is the creator. Mm-hmm. He created Blackish and Mixedish and Grownish, mm-hmm. and produced America's Next Top Model. Like, so everything.
Wow.
Wrote like The New Coming to America, and like, he's got his hands in everything. He's quite a force. And such a funny writer, such a talented writer. And we've just known each other socially. And he was like, I want to do a show. You know, he left, he had a deal at ABC and he left. He wanted to do a show with this new deal at Netflix about his life. So this is kind of like his Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, great.
He plays himself. I play his wife. We have six kids. We're like a dysfunctional new money, you know, Black rich family that has a lot of problems.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer for it. It looks really good. And he looks really good. I didn't know that I really knew him before. I mean, has he done?
No, he's never acted before.
Oh, you're kidding. He never acted before.
Wow. He did a really good job. He's so, he's just so instinctively, I mean, you know, improvising with him obviously is like great because he's a writer, but he's so instinctively hilarious. And he's got like the quality of his voice and his rhythm. He's just great. He's so good.
Oh, I love that. That's so nice.
Yeah. When you said that you play his wife, I said, oh yeah, you and I did White Fang together and played a couple.
Oh my God, we played husband and wife.
I don't remember that.
It was an animated version of White Fang.
Right.
It was at Sundance like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. People love that movie.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's really well done.
I cried.
I love it. It's really sweet. Yeah, it's really good.
Oh my God, I forgot.
I've never seen it. No. Uh-uh.
I can't believe
that. There's a couple things of yours that I never saw. There's that
what
one
else?
That Robert, it's like based on a comic. It's like all like a lot of dudes doing crazy
Sin
shit.
City.
Sin City, I never saw. I never saw the movie you did with Kirsten Dunst.
All Good Things.
Never saw that.
Oh, I didn't see that either, but I know that's like the
it's the Robert Durst story.
The Robert Durst story.
Made by the same filmmaker who made The Jinx. But here's the thing.
Let's watch it now because it's streaming now, and when it came out it wasn't.
Super smart. But here's the thing, you guys. It's so great. It's so great that he had such a success with The Jinx because he did a beautiful job of making a narrative feature film. Ryan Gosling plays Robert Durst.
That's crazy.
Kirsten Dunst plays his victim wife. Frank Langella plays his dad.
Wow.
But here's the thing. Because of the ending of the story, which we all know, but I'll just say, like, I don't want to give a spoiler, but like...
I think it's okay at this point.
Okay, yeah.
I think the statute of limitations is up on the Jinx.
Basically, there's a murderer in the story, and the end of the movie is he gets away with it. The end of the movie is like,
right.
This guy now lives in Galveston, and he's selling real estate. And I saw a screening of it with Kirsten when it was done. And we walked out and we were like, oh no, this sucks because the movie's so good. Kirsten and Ryan were so good in it, but the movie made you so angry that it was like, it made it terrible. It made it a terrible experience where you're like, fuck you, movie.
Right.
That's not how movies are supposed to work.
Wow.
It was so infuriating.
They should reshoot the ending now.
They totally should. They totally should.
Because he got his. Oh, my God. I mean, like, is there ever a better moment than that? That moment that he captured on film? Like, how?
It's crazy.
And also, Jarecki twice capturing the Freemans. Like, he just is like.
Yes, right.
Right place. Oh, yeah. Wrong, maybe wrong place, wrong time. But whatever it is, he gets that. I mean, yeah, that's crazy.
He does not like upper middle class to affluent criminals to get away with shit. Mm. He will bring you to justice with the right. incredibly perverse method of making a documentary about you.
Like, that you're consenting to.
Yeah. Like right. the law in this country couldn't do it. Let's make a movie.
Right.
Speaking of Nick's oeuvre, have you by any chance gotten to see Devs on
Yes.
FX? Oh my
yes,
God.
Yes, I'm all caught up so and I'm like good? Waiting.
I it's know. So good. And I've gotten to see I'm the like, whole thing. It's really
Don't
good.
Tell me, but like, can you just like, can you, is there going to be like a, like, is there like a, is there like a big twist?
I feel like every episode has a gigantic twist.
I don't know. I mean, there's a.
Are there any bombs that are left to drop? Five.
There's sort of one. And it's not a crazy bomb, but it's because we begin to hint at it in the last few episodes. But so there is like an unexpected final plot point.
Okay.
But it's I mean, it's just it's
I think I know. I think I know what you're talking about. I love seeing you as that guy.
Isn't
like
it
with
great?
Like a steely,
how about Nick's face? Some of those
Nick's
close-ups
and that yes. hair.
Oh,
and
that's so
thank
good.
You.
Steely building and the green and the greenery. Like, I'm just so into it.
Yeah.
You as like a billionaire, like madman, is great.
Thank you, but let's not be talking about my television program on a podcast.
It's so good though. I'm gonna rewatch the whole
This
thing.
Is Pillow Talk. We're in bed.
All right.
You know? Yeah, we could talk about
Thank you. I feel so lucky to get to work with Alex and all those collaborators. And I think Allison Pill is so
she's
amazing.
Fantastic.
The whole cast. And Sonoya is the lead. Yeah.
Yeah, Sonoya. She's so I like randomly sat next to her at a dinner in Tokyo.
Oh wow.
Last spring.
See,
and I was
that's
like,
what
this
I'm talking
is
about.
The most
You're
beautiful,
everywhere.
Like smart, like cool girl I've ever met. Who is this girl?
Yeah
she's so cool.
Yeah, suddenly like an instant superhero.
I love
in
her.
This role.
Her acting to me is unbelievable because she's so, there is no artifice at all, and her you know access to her emotions is
I know
crazy amazing.
I know.
Yeah, she's great.
It's very.
I feel
cool.
like that's something
I love
you can't
that show.
Learn. Can you learn that? Can you learn to burst into
No, you
tears?
Can. You can unlearn so. Other things to get to that. I think.
Mm.
Like you might have that somewhere in your being, but you have to like get rid of artifice, to, like chip away at it.
Yeah. Well, Rashida, you are a beautiful light.
I'm loath to wrap it up.
I know. Aww. This is a good one.
It's you know we had such a wonderful time working together on Parks and Rec and White Fang and
great time on White Fang.
But now you're our guest on our podcast, and so I'm going to tell you from that point of view, we find you astonishing. You're so accomplished.
Yeah.
I love talking to you because you're so hip. But also so smart.
Mm.
So
same thing, right?
It's
you guys.
So
nice.
This is so valuable, and we're deeply grateful to have you here in our dining room in a small computer window.
Yeah.
Listen, be careful what you say because I might just call you every day.
These
are some compliments that I need.
Oh, I wish.
You won't hurt
me. Yes, you would. Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for bringing your ears to another installment of The Beloved In Bed with Nick and Megan, specially guested by Rashida Jones.
Good night.
Good night.
In Bed with Nick and Megan is an Earwolf production. It's produced by Megan Mullally, Kevin Bartelt, and Michael Landry. Executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon. Music by Nancy and Beth, which can be found at www.nancyandbeth.com. If you enjoyed In Bed with Nick and Megan, make sure to rate it and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.